103.2 Dublin City FM, The Sod Show. Good afternoon. 103.2 Dublin City FM, Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan. Hello and welcome to The Sod Show. We have a wonderful show for you today. It's been held off for a couple of weeks, but today we have Jane Powers' interview with Joy Larcombe. An absolutely wonderful interview which you won't want to miss. But before we go there, a word about our sponsors. Green Sacks, compostable bags for home and garden. Check them out on the internet at www.greensacks.ie. The kind of bag you want to have in your brown bin. Greensacks.ie. Thanks to them for their sponsorship of The Sod Show over the last number of years. Coming up on Saturday night, The Sod Show is in the running for a blog award for best podcast. We won it last year. Can we do it 2 years in a row? Only time will tell. We'll tell you next week. But our fingers, our legs and everything at The Sod Show is crossed, and Peter Donegan says his are too. Right, coming up after this song of the week, we have an absolutely wonderful interview with Joy Larcombe talking with Jane Powers. But a song, and it's chosen by Peter Donegan. He wants us to listen to Todd Doyle and the Troubles and Curbman.
Emotions of a curbman get split into simple segments of life. After he lost his wife, the people they perceive him as a dishonest, pointless waste of air. You know they just don't care. Say it's him to blame, it's his own shame. It's him to blame, it's his own shame. It's him to blame. Now he's dead. And one day Curbman awakes and turns around the way he shakes his feather hat. He says it's him to blame. One day Curbman gets struck by lightning and he finds a job and quits his fighting for good. In a perfect world, but this is not a perfect world. Perfect world,
6 months later, as I jump and I curb my, the people say, they say it's you to blame. They say it's you to blame. It's your get split into simple segments of life. After he lost his wife.
103.2 Dublin City FM. It's the Sod Show, and that's Todd Doyle and the Troubled, and it's from These Days EP. Song's called Curbman, and it was Donegan's choice. I like it. I might take your bet there with that song and double it with a song at the end of the show. If there's time, I'd love to play you something. Have a listen out for that. We're going to tease you a little bit longer because our interview is coming up in a moment, but first I want to tell you about some horticulture classes that are happening in, I'd call it, the Dundrum area. So let me tell you where it's on. St. Tiernan's Community School, and it all starts on the 16th of October. That's Wednesday next, and it's a class given over a 10-week period by none other than, guess who, Peter Donegan. And if you're interested in that, get in touch with St. Tiernan's. Actually, it says it's a duration of 8 weeks, and I was told it was 10, so maybe there's an extra 2 weeks at the end. Get in touch with St. Tiernan's, and you can reach them on 295-3224. 295-3224. That's in the Dundrum area, as I said. Park Vale, Ballally. And two places I know quite well, because there's a Park Vale in Baldoyle where I lived for 11 years. There's only one other Park Vale in Dublin that I know, and that's the one in Ballally. And Ballally, I worked on Sunset Radio in Ballally in the 1990s. I know it too well. The end of the Lewis Line, well, it used to be the end of the Lewis Line in Sandyford, is not far away. So if you're interested, that's kicking off on the 16th of October. Right, we've teased you long enough. It's an interview of the week time, and this week it's Jane Powers in conversation with Joy Larcombe.
So I'm sitting here with Joy Larcombe, who is widely known as the Vegetable Queen. She's a Garden Media Guild Lifetime Achievement Award winner. She's also a winner of the RHS Veitch Medal, and she's a wonderful writer. I absolutely adore all her books, and she's one of the people who, when I'm looking for information about my vegetable garden, she's the first person whose books I take down from the shelf. So welcome, Joy. I'm delighted to be here with you. You used to live in Suffolk for 30-something years?
About 35.
And you gardened there, and you had a market garden. And then you moved to West Cork in?
2002.
And tell me, why did you move to West Cork from Suffolk?
It's probably a very long story, but it's kind of, for years and years, we had talked about it. My husband was originally from Detroit, and his ancestors went to States and Canada in the famine years from Lena. So there's kind of always been a family link. But really, it was just that we fell in love with Ireland years and years ago. We came back constantly And we just always thought that this is where we'd be happy in our retirement.
And as I recall, your retirement actually involved just bashing full scale into your acre or half acre garden in West Cork and putting up all these mad windbreaks before you were able to garden because the trees were almost horizontal.
Yeah.
So that doesn't sound like much of a retirement to
me. Well, no, I mean, we keep saying now that this was 12 years ago. Thank God we did it then when we were, you know, 12 years younger and had 12 years more energy. It was a task. The garden is theoretically only half an acre. Half an acre? Yeah, but we think it's Ireland's most generous half acre. But it was incredibly windswept, and until we put up windbreaks. Artificial windbreaks to protect the trees and grow the trees. It was very, very hard to grow anything.
I mean, I've been down to your garden almost every year for the last 12 years, and it's one of the most productive gardens that I know for its size.
Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, in the end, we laid it out kind of like a fan with the spokes of the fan being extra internal windbreaks for protecting fruit in particular. And it has worked. I mean, it's kind of, to me, it's aesthetically pleasing. But we do grow a lot. We grow a huge amount. And it's not until we step outside into the open field beyond we realise we have created shelter.
You have a wonderful little microclimate that you created there.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you did when you were starting out your life as a vegetable grower was that you went on what you call your grand vegetable tour in 1976 and 1977. And you packed your belongings into a Mercedes van and caravan and your two children. And as you said in your talk, that you don't know how you managed because you and your husband Don Pollard, who's your partner in crime and vegetables, you said that you two were two of the most untidy people that you know. So one of the things that you did during your grand vegetable tour was that you kept a daily diary. And there's a wonderful picture in a book, which I'm going to mention in a minute, of yourself at a typewriter and table by a roadside in the middle of Europe taking your notes. So that book, actually, which I'm going to mention now so you're not all waiting, is called Just Vegetating. And it is the most wonderful memoir of the world's best garden writers, I think, who I'm sitting with. And it's a memoir of your times on your various vegetable collecting trips, and it's also old articles from several decades span. But tell me, so when you went on the grand vegetable tour, the purpose of that was to collect old and unknown seeds and also research techniques.
It was a kind of mixture. At the time, people were just becoming aware of the desperate need to collect seed of old varieties, because they were dying out so quickly. The big commercial seed companies were just growing so rapidly, and the F1 hybrids had come in. So it only takes a few years for a traditional variety to fall out of use and disappear forever.
Just for our listeners who don't necessarily know what an F1 variety is.
An F1 variety is a modern hybrid variety that has a very complex breeding pattern, is very expensive, but may have lots of valuable characteristics and is pushed by the seed companies because that's their form of revenue. It's a kind of inbuilt patent, so it's their, if it's their F1 variety, they're the only people that can get money from it. So they're promoted at the expense of old traditional varieties. And so there was quite an awareness at the time, partly stimulated by Lawrence Hills, who founded a big organic organisation in the UK, and actually managed to even persuade the British government to set up a vegetable gene bank. So we did manage to get a small grant towards collecting seeds, that the only stipulation was we sent it to the gene bank. So that was one of our objectives. But just the whole excuse, people had told me again and again, kind of hinted at interesting things, interesting plants on the continent. And we just felt going, travelling with a purpose. It so changes the whole complexion of what you do.
I think you said in your talk today you collected something like 140 varieties of seed.
I think we sent back something like 120 or so, you know. A lot of them from Portugal. That proved to be one of the countries that had the most old varieties.
Was there one of those varieties that maybe is now quite popular that maybe you were responsible for having introduced into horticulture, do you think?
Well, I think probably that we sent them back to the vegetable gene bank, and they told me later that one of the broccolis we'd sent from Portugal, I think it was a red-headed one, was used in a plant breeding program. Anybody could have access to the seeds that were there, and to some kind of broccoli that was around for a while now, whether it's still around. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the main thing we'd heard. They were amazing and very rugged Portuguese cabbages and kales that at least have been kept alive, because they may have genetic qualities that are invaluable.
And another thing that you were collecting was you were collecting seeds of mixed salad leaves, which are a thing that we find on our supermarket shelves now and on our dinner tables. Baby leaves, they're just part of our cuisine now. But you and Don were some of the first people to actually introduce those into this part of Europe.
Yes, we saw them. They have these mixtures called misticanza in Italy and mescal, very, very old traditional mixtures of things. And in Italy in particular, we got there late spring, and people collect, and some of the people who sell in markets collect wild plants from the wild. They grow little tiny salad leaves, loads of chicories and things, and you'd have a market stand, which would have, 10 different baskets of different things, and you could just say, I'll have a little bit of that and a little bit of that, and make your own mixed salad. And when we came back home and we needed to earn a living, we started growing salads and selling the mixed bags. We called them saladini. In fact, we had misheard the Italian word for little tiny leaves, it's insalatine, and we had misheard that. And so we called our mixtures saladini, which was a kind of corruption of the Italian. But it was basically an idea that we'd got from just seeing this traditional peasant.
That expression, saladini, is a word that one of the major seed companies in Britain then adopted
leaves. It's been widely adopted. I mean, I remember going to an ADAS, the advisory service in the UK, going to a lecture, and they were talking about saladini like it was in the Oxford English Dictionary. And subsequently, I became interested in oriental vegetables, and we did mixtures that we called oriental saladini. It's kind of a nice word. It's cottoned on.
Yes, it's a lovely word.
Yeah.
And another thing that you were doing was you were investigating techniques for growing, and so you came across techniques of mulching.
Yes, that was really interesting. In Spain in particular, in the southern Spain, with masses of polytunnels kind of perched on and what was virtually rock, and they actually were utilising old Arab techniques of irrigation, but also Arab techniques of mulching, where they would just put like even manure on a rock and then cover it with stones. And the stones prevented evaporation, but also at night they gave out the heat, so that plants planted into this kind of fertile mixture could grow. And this had been adopted by commercial growers in huge modern polytunnels. You'd see this very modern thing of a polytunnel, but all the plants were mulched by sometimes deep layers of sand, 6, 8, 9 inches of sand and stone. Again, a very interesting example of conserving the soil moisture, but also the extra heat given out at night. It's a very interesting technique.
Yeah.
Adaptation of modern technology and ancient technology, the merging of the two is fascinating.
Yes,
really.
And all of that is covered in your book.
Yeah,
just vegetating.
There's a whole chapter on mulching, which I think is an intriguing subject.
I'm mad for mulching.
Yeah,
absolutely mad for mulching.
Yeah, well,
yes.
So am I.
Yes.
And I think in that article I originally wrote about mulching, it mentioned some old Suffolk book where it had mentioned that people were paid to thatch the fields with straw. And so obviously mulching was straw, which I advocate so strongly today.
Yes.
Very, very old technique.
Yes.
There's very little new in gardening.
I know, it just comes around with a different name on it.
It may take several centuries, but...
So the other thing that I wanted to ask you about was you also took a trip to China where you were investigating oriental vegetables. And one of the things that you said during your talk today was that you felt that oriental vegetables were tailor-made for our climate in Ireland. And I wanted you to tell me why. And perhaps could you tell me if, say, a person is getting into gardening, what oriental vegetable variety would you suggest that they should try that they're going to have a good success with, that isn't going to get disease or get, eaten by pests?
Right. Well, when I talk about the oriental vegetables, I'm particularly talking about the greens, kind of things in the cabbage family. Because so many of these plants, if you sow them in the spring, their natural tendency to do with day length and temperature to some extent is to run straight to seed.
So some of those vegetables would be, say, pak choi.
Chinese cabbage itself, or Chinese leaves, which is probably the hardest to grow. There are lots and lots of different kind of pak choi's.
And then things like oriental mustards and mitsuna.
The mustard
things
mitsuna,
like that.
And mitsuna is a very shaggy leaf, a kind of mild mustardy flavour. Mibuna is a kind of related, a slightly long, thin leaf, but nice as well. And the mustards are quite spicy. But all these things, you can mix them together. The spicy ones, you can actually, just by shredding them, take away the worst of the spiciness, but you get lovely vegetable, a lovely range of flavours. But if you sow them from about, really after the longest day, is it the shortest day in the middle of the year? The longest day, from kind of mid-July onwards, they grow very, very fast, much, much faster than our greens. And they, a lot of them are hardy, so they survive right through the winter. But you can grow them outside. A lot of them you can grow outside all through the winter, particularly the mustards. Or else you can be planting them in your polytunnel any time from September, October onwards, when your polytunnel starts emptying out. You can plant or sow oriental greens in there, and you'll be picking them all through the winter. If you sow them too early in the year, all the things that go for cabbages will go for them, you know, the cabbage white butterflies and all those kind of things, flea beetle. But if you sow them from about August into September, even October undercover, most of those pests are far less damaging. So you can have these lovely vegetables in the winter months.
So if somebody is lucky enough to have a polytunnel or a greenhouse, it's still not too late now to sow a crop.
No, and you can get mixtures like the oriental saladini. So you could just sow a little mixture and have catacomb against seedlings in winter. Certainly at the moment, I mean, I have sown quite a few earlier, and if I hadn't been coming away, I'd been planting some outside. But you can still sow. You could probably sow even into October undercover, and just for the little seedling leaves. And then you can thin them out and have a bigger plant if you want.
So finally, I want to ask you one question before we go, and that is, when you go back to West Cork to your half acre, what are you going to be doing?
I will be planting out more oriental vegetables. I've got them in trays. In fact, I was furious with myself because I had some little pak choi's that I desperately wanted to thin out, and it was a question of leaving or not leaving. So I looked at them and thought, please don't get too straggly while I'm away. I'll be pricking those out. I'll be planting out things like mizuna and mibuna. Those will be the first jobs I'll be doing. And I've still got chards and things to plant out. And corn salad for the winter months as well.
Thank you. That was Joy Larkham, a gardening hero. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Jane.
103.2 Dublin City FM, The Sod Show. Talking about postcodes, I hear that everywhere in Ireland is getting six-digit zip codes by 2015. I think they're going to have a whole lot of confusion before we get used to them and sort it out. But imagine Ballybuckle with a six-digit zip code. Ballybuckle. D73XQW. Yeah, just don't get it. Back to our interview, and a million thanks to the wonderful, gorgeous sounding Jane Powers, and an interview that was just worth waiting for. Joy Larkham in conversation here on The Sod Show, the garden kitchen queen of gardening. Absolutely wonderful to hear. We're back next Friday, 3 p.m, with thanks to our sponsors, greensax.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. We'll talk to you next Friday. Take care. Bye-bye. At Sodshow on Twitter, The Sodshow on Facebook, and sodshow.com for the back catalogue. Do drop us a line.